This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. To face your first challenge and to find out more, head on over to TrekFan.org.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home. This is To the Journey.
To the journey.
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt and...
Lori Sears.
We have a hot button issue today that we're going to talk about. Hot button.
Hot.
People at home. This is involving the good old PD, that is Prime Directive. Now, Prime Directive is a touchy subject for a lot of people. Now, for those of you who have seen the new Star Trek film, the Prime Directive is definitely addressed, at least at the beginning. And I'm glad that we see this new iteration of Trek still involving the old laws of the Prime Universe into this JJ-verse. And it is something that has been talked about ever since. It was mentioned once in TOS and heavily in TNG and, of course, in Deep Space Nine. And Voyager is no different. And it wasn't invented yet in Enterprise, but yet there was one episode when they're like, yeah, maybe we need to develop some sort of rule before we just go, you know, visiting alien, alien species.
Yeah.
Yes.
But what we're going to talk about today is the degree and how often Captain Catherine Janeway deals with the Prime Directive. Does she violate it more often than she adheres to it? This is what you're going to hear about today. And how does she rank against other captains? Now, this is so subjective, so we can't really say, like, oh, you know, Picard has 7 points and, you know, Catherine has 9. You know, we can't do that. It's really all just opinion and circumstance-based. And so I just want to say, let's just start off with generalities. Lori, how do you feel like Janeway dealt with the Prime Directive overall? I mean, not just in the first episode, but in the first season, but all 7 years. How do you feel, like, without getting too specific?
I think she was really strict to begin with, like, and what I mean to begin with, like, in the first episode. But then after that, it just was up and down. It was like the seismic chart of maybe today we'll keep it. No, tomorrow. It just depends. Oh, what's that? Situational ethics is probably what I would call what she did. That's what I think.
Good word.
Getting some highbrow up in TTJ today.
I'm chilling, you know.
Woo. Yeah, look at Lori with that pipe and the jacket. She's very distinguished today.
The elbow pads. I was wondering why she was wearing all that stuff.
Yes, I have a new
now
job.
Now we know.
There we go.
Hot stuff.
All right, wow. Char. Same question, Char.
Okay, I don't know if I can drop some terms like that, but I'll try to sound intelligent.
I set the bar.
You know, I do kind of agree that she was a little more strict and uptight about things at first, and then as the Delta Quadrant wore her down a little bit, it's a little more, you know, I might let this one slide here and there, because I think Janeway learned over time, sometimes breaking the rules was okay as a way of seeing a means to an end. The consequences of breaking the Prime Directive weren't as bad as if, say, she upheld the Prime Directive. Mm-hmm. I would say in this instance, if we want to bring in other captains, is she's a little more with, like, Captain Kirk out there in the unknown on a much longer than 5-year mission that she cannot call home every time that there's a problem. She doesn't have to get advice from Starfleet Command at every turn, because she can't. She was all on her own. And it was completely up to her, save for the advice of her senior staff, to make the best choice she probably could. And who's to say that Starfleet would tell her anything different? Really?
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. So as fans, or if we were Starfleet headquarters, like let's do a dual purpose role here. Let's say we're the fans and we're Starfleet headquarters. Does Captain Janeway deserve a break because she is far flung in the Delta Quadrant? I mean, do the same rules apply to her that they would, say, Picard in the Alpha Quadrant or Beta Quadrant?
I think your term, Lori, subjective case, whatever it was.
Situational ethics, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that one. I think that term is so good because something like giving technology to the Hirogen, the holodeck technology, which we did see the consequences thereof, as a matter of fact,
right,
is a little different than, say, destroying a pre-warp civilization and altering their course, kind of like what we saw in Blink of an Eye.
Right.
I'd say the consequences are very different. One was intentional, the other was not.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a big difference between being thrust into a situation that you have no control over and then, you know, having a premeditated thought of, okay, I know that this is against the Prime Directive, but I'm going to break it anyway because it's a means to an end. I think there's a big difference there. I mean, we can't judge Janeway for Blink of an Eye or Time and Again. I mean, these situations are either paradoxical or accidental. Exactly.
Right.
And I think we need to focus on the ones that she had no control over.
Well, okay, I want to bring one up, guys. What about Caretaker?
Yes, that is the first one. I have a list of three people listening at home. I have a list of three situations that we absolutely have to talk about. And Caretaker, ironically, is number one on my list. We need to talk about
Caretaker.
Okay,
let's hit it.
Do it.
Okay, so, all right, so Caretaker. First instance that she's in the Delta Quadrant. And at the end, she can send her crew home, thus removing herself from the situation where she will no longer need to battle against the Prime Directive or anything like that. But she has a choice. She's like, okay, so the Caretaker was going to destroy the array so that the Kazon could not take it over and have a shift in balance of power in the Delta Quadrant amongst the Ocampa and the Kazon. But then Janeway said, well, since the self-destruct is out, the Kazon can just take it. So instead, I'm going to, you know, make sure the Caretaker's wishes are like actually happen. And so I'm going to destroy the array banning us here and then making sure that the Kazon do not get it, thus leaving the Ocampa free. So this right here, some people say, yes, it is a break in the Prime Directive. Some people say no, and other people say yes, but it's justified. So after my long explanation about the situation, what do you guys think? Like, where do you fall? Yes, no, yes, but it's okay.
I am on the side, I think, of she did what she thought was right, and therefore it has to be okay, because I think she's damned if she does, damned if she doesn't. I think there's going to be nitpickers getting on her case no matter what she did in this scenario. I figure either way, she does not win. You either let things happen naturally and let the Kazon take over and take over the Ocampa because the Caretaker's array does not destruct, or you follow the Caretaker's wishes and you see things through that way. She did what she thought was right, and who's to say I wouldn't do the same?
Right. And yeah, that's kind of how I feel, really. I mean, it's one of those decisions you have to make right there in that moment. And it's like, okay, I have to do one thing or the other. She could have flipped a coin and made the decision because she had to decide. So yeah, I'm with you. She was kind of, it's like you're stuck. It's a conundrum. You don't know what to do. So I'm just going to do this.
Right.
I feel like according to Starfleet law that she broke it. And that's what she did. Like, now, was she morally right? I think so, because the Kazon were an aggressive power and the Ocampa were passive, and the Kazon were going to take over the Ocampa even though they had nothing to do with them. But it was not Janeway's place to do that. The Kazon destroyed the array's self-destruct on their own.
Yeah.
Like, they were going after the array whether Voyager was there or not.
That's absolutely true. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, Voyager's presence had no effect on the Kazon wanting to take over the Ocampa. Mm-hmm. And so it was the Kazon, Now, I'm not saying they had the right to, but it was their quadrant, their situation, their culture, and they were going to take over the Ocampa, and the Ocampa are not warp capable.
Right.
And now, granted, they're aware of spaceflight, they're aware of the caretaker and everything like that, but they're not a warp capable society. And at least they were at one time, but they're no longer today. So I don't know how the rules are. It's a fuzzy situation with dealing with the Ocampa, but with dealing with the Array and the Kazon, she did break the Prime Directive. But I do believe that she was morally right. But was she within a realm? Was she within bounds of Starfleet law? I think not.
Okay, that's really good. That helped me see that in a different light, because I was always a little on the fence about Caretaker, about how Voyager kind of gets to be on its journey. But ultimately, I erred on the side of Janeway. And you're right, it's because she made the morally right decision, not necessarily because it was the best decision. It's just, it's that snap judgment. Like you said, Lori, yeah. She had to make the best decision she could at the time. She listened to her gut, just me making up what I think Janeway went through, and making that call, and that's what she did. And then, of course, we see in Night, where she has a little too much time on her hands, looks back on this decision, and regrets it very deeply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
And she said herself that she didn't, in Night, she talked about how she made this decision that affected her crew for a bunch of strangers. She did not make this decision because she was bound by Starfleet law to make this decision. She made this decision because it was one of those, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few kind of deal.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think that's definitely, it was her gut reaction, and it's hard to judge someone who's in the chair and you're not. I think there was an episode of Deep Space Nine where Worf was under investigation, and this lawyer was asking O'Brien, like, do you think he made the right decision? And O'Brien said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I think. I'm not the captain. I was not in command of the starship. Worf was. And so, you know, it's hard to gauge gut reactions when you're dealing with that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's kind of like, okay, I decided this. The consequences are whatever they're going to be. This is the decision I made. So,
right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I think she felt like her prime directive decisions went to the wayside because she felt like those Ocampan lives were more important than her own ideals. There's another thing I wanted to talk about, another situation, and this one deals with an even bigger shift in power in the Delta Quadrant than with the Kazon and the Ocampa, and that would be the Borg and species 8472 in Scorpion. This unholy alliance between the Voyager crew and the Borg.
That's right. Deal with the devil.
Exactly. Deal with the devil, almost literally.
Yeah, and definitely.
And so with that, okay, so to recap for people who may not remember, species 8472 was wiping the floor with the Borg. The Borg were almost extinct because 8472 was just like, you don't scare us. But yet you're bothering us, and so we're going to destroy you.
Yeah.
And they had a phrase of they're going to purge all weakness from the galaxy. And so Janeway took that as in they're going to destroy everything. And so she made an alliance with the Borg, even traded technology with the Borg in order to eradicate species 8472. So she made a figurative deal with the devil. And species 8472 was sent back to fluidic space with their tail between their legs, and the Borg are still around. So, was Janeway justified? Was species 8472 a bigger threat than the Borg? Did she have the right to trade technology, which is what they said that they weren't supposed to do, and help one race over another when they didn't officially ask for help?
Okay, just to clarify one thing. When you're dealing with two warp-capable races, they're not allowed to trade technology. I mean, to a certain point, I mean, really, didn't the Vulcans help along the humans just a teeny bit, or no?
Well, no, that's a different issue. Like, where the warp-capable, like, trading technology, like, okay, I should have rephrased it better. Like, you're not supposed to give technology, advanced technology, to someone who's pre-warp.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a big no-no. Yeah. But on top of that, you're not supposed to give weapons to another race.
Okay. Now, that is the key word here, because this technology was a weapon to use against Species 8472.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. And also, it could be turned into a weapon of mass destruction.
Right.
Which Starfleet was not supposed to be about.
No, not at all.
And so I think that, like, so it replaced the term technology with weapons, and you can take the pre-warp stuff out of it. Because, like, obviously, the Borg are more advanced than us.
Right.
Species 8472 is more advanced than us. But should we have picked a side when they're both what we would perceive as bad guys? I mean, we pick sides in the Dominion War. We pick sides in the Klingon War. But I don't know. That's the gray area. Like, was it okay?
Right. Yeah. I mean, do you pick the lesser of two evils so one obliterates the other?
Yeah.
Or do you let them fight it out and then deal with whoever wins later?
Mm.
Because they will come after you. One is going to take over the other, and then say,
do we know that?
Well,
that's the question.
Yeah.
Did she know that Species 8472 was going to go after everybody else, including Earth? Because Earth, and they're, like, we find out later that Earth was not a target. Until Voyager made themselves known.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They're like, you made an alliance with the Borg, so we're going to go after you. So, in a sense, she initiated the own threat that she thought that she was prohibiting.
That makes it look so ugly.
Yeah, it really does.
Now, hindsight is always 20/20.
Of course. But wow. But, she really screwed that one up.
She did. She really did. And I never put that together until you said that. That makes so much sense, too.
For some reason, I'm seeing this in a different context, too, Lori. And
you
just blew my mind.
You did. Pow. I'm blown away.
Kablooey.
So with that new knowledge, I mean, with having hindsight, which Catherine didn't, and knowing that she, by making an alliance with the Borg, is making Earth a target for Species 8472, did she make the right choice? I think that she broke the Prime Directive. I think by giving weapon technology to eradicate another species that wasn't necessarily an imminent threat to Starfleet, because I feel like that's the difference. Like, if another power came to us and said, hey, we have some tools to defeat the Borg, we're like, oh, the Borg have been trying to kill us for a long time. Thank you. Yes, we'll take that. But is there a difference between like seeing a fight between two forces and like, hey, one can help us get home even though we don't have a dog in this fight? Is that the gray area? What do you guys think?
I think so much of this is hindsight. We know now that this was a short-sighted decision, but I think Janeway was trying to think big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Because why wouldn't they go after Earth if they're more powerful than the Borg? I mean, humans are complete weaklings compared to that.
Yeah,
and they can
definitely
move. They can create singularities to pretty much go wherever they want because they're separate. Their space is separate from
normal
space.
So if they're going to obliterate weakness in the galaxy, if I were her, and if I were sleep deprived for 3 days, as she was when she was making these decisions, I would be in this similar train of thought. Like, why wouldn't they go after Earth? Why wouldn't they go after everybody and eliminate us all? I have no choice but to side with the enemy to have some kind of fighting chance against these guys.
Yeah, kind of like the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of deal, where you... You choose.
Kind of, only it wasn't.
No, they turned it around, but I don't know. Like you said, making a sleep-deprived decision definitely will screw you over in the end.
Not the wisest thing to do.
No. Yeah, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. You guys are very right. I mean, hindsight is 20/20. Janeway had a lot on her plate. She was sleep-deprived for 3 days, but I think many captains have been able to make decisions under that kind of pressure, and that's why you have a first officer.
Yeah,
right.
I was thinking about that too. She's so stubborn. Just so stubborn.
Yeah.
Chakotay said on the record, I am not okay with this. I think this is a stupid idea. And she's like, fine, I'm going to do it anyway. And so if both of them are court-martialed for this, Chakotay's going home free.
That's right.
Exactly. He did his job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one's on Janeway and... she probably had to answer to that when she got home.
Yeah.
Because it was just, I think her main motivation, I don't think, one of her motivations might have been, the Alpha Quadrant, they're at risk too. But I think her main motivation was, we're going to be another 2 years in Borg space.
Right.
And I need to get her through. And for that, I think it's selfish. And I think that is why she broke the Prime Directive. And so the thought of the Alpha Quadrant being in danger does not supersede her selfish decision. That's just kind of, my opinion. So
secondary, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my thought on it. That's just mine.
I don't know if I want to think that way, but if we had some proof that that was what she was thinking, then that would be incredibly short-sighted, selfish, and foolish.
Yes. Okay, well, we talked about that one for a long time, and we have one coming up that there is no question. There is absolutely no question that this was wrong, that this was against the rules, and completely selfish. I kind of tried to organize it for a caretaker. She had the moral high ground. Scorpion, it could go either way. In this one, there is no doubt whatsoever, and that is Admiral Catherine Janeway.
Yes.
In Endgame.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much.
Definitely.
For bringing this up. You know I have issues with Endgame.
Well, yes. let me describe it first for those who may not remember. And if you don't remember, my goodness, please get on it.
Watch this atrocity.
So we're in an alternate future where Admiral Janeway is home, and she's been home for a couple of decades. And she was like, you know what? I don't like how I ended my tour in the Delta Quadrant, and I lost too many people. So I'm going to take advanced technology with me, and I'm going to go back in time and break not only the Prime Directive, but the Temporal Prime Directive as well, change the course of history, and not only change events, but give past generations future technology. And not just technology, let's be specific again, future weapons. We're talking about, what were those torpedoes called? They weren't quantum torpedoes. They were
transphasic or something like that.
Something like that. I honestly can't remember, so I'm a bad Trekkie right now. But like even more, like a torpedo that could destroy a Borg cube in one shot, a blade of armor that could cover and protect Voyager, and numerous other pieces of technology. And she prohibited Seven of Nine and Chakotay from dying, thus altering their history. And Admiral Janeway died, so she didn't get a court-martial. But let's not just think about Admiral Janeway. Let's think about Captain Janeway going along with all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
So, Lori, what was your gut reaction when you were bombarded and getting slapped in the face by the Prime Directive in Endgame?
Oh my gosh, I thought, what in the world? Why are we going out like this, number one? And two, why would the captain go along with all this mess unless, again, like you were saying, it's just the selfish, quick decision? Because she didn't want to go along with it at first. It took forever, and then it was like, oh, all these people are going to die? Well, go right ahead. Do it. It's fine. It's perfectly okay.
Yeah. If you want to talk about a selfish decision, this was pretty selfish on both Janeway parts.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I'm sorry. This makes absolutely no sense. After all that we saw, after all the times when Janeway wouldn't compromise. Like, remember when Q offered to bring Janeway home? I think it was in Death Wish.
Right.
And she said, I'm not going to succumb to a bribe. We're going to go home through old-fashioned hard work.
Right. Yeah.
What happened to that?
Yeah, for real. And if you're going to just pick and choose a time to come back, all those people died before that. You still let them die? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, why not go back to when Voyager gets lost in the Badlands and prevent the journey in the first place? Why do you pick this moment?
Seriously.
Exactly.
It just makes no sense. And the real kicker is that just, like, what, the episode before, or just a couple episodes before, Carrie gets killed. And you're not going to save him? He's just some nobody to you? Screw you!
No, the important person was Seven in her mind.
Apparently, well, yeah, Seven dies, Chakotay dies, Tuvok has an irreparable condition. I guess the Triad put her over the top.
That's true. Those are the three people who are closest to her.
Mm-hmm.
I know, in the series, but really?
which just throws it even more with even more fuel on the fire of it being a selfish decision.
Yes.
Not a captaincy one.
No. Yeah. She's apparently got nothing better to do but to plan this out. And that's all it is. It is a selfish decision, and there's just no way you could defend yourself to Starfleet on this.
Yeah, there's no defense, and I don't even think Homefront, is that the novels, the post novels?
Homecoming.
Homecoming. I always want to say Homefront for some reason. Homecoming barely even addressed this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She had a court-martial, or it wasn't even a court-martial. It was a hearing for, what, all of 5 minutes, charges dropped, and you're out of here?
Yeah, it was like...
you're an admiral.
7 years.
Right. Here's your promotion. Take it.
This is 7 years of events that we need to go over, but we'll just do it real quick because, you know what, you had a hard time. So, no, it's fine.
Yeah, like, pat yourself on the back, take a cookie, and be on your merry way.
Take a cookie.
Yeah, I think that was another case where Starfleet looks the other way when it benefits them, like Section 31.
Right. Yeah. Yes, that's a good point.
Jinx, Lori.
They disavow Section 31. Like, they're like, we have nothing to do with them. It's an entity that we have no control over, and we're sorry if they, you know, mess up your stuff.
Lawyers.
But if it benefits Starfleet, they're like, well, okay, we'll just turn a blind eye. But if they damage Starfleet, they're like, oh my goodness, and, you know, like, of course, like we said, we have no control over it. But
yeah.
Starfleet wanted that ablative armor. They wanted those mm-hmm. torpedoes. And
yeah.
So they're like, hey, this is against the rules, but it's almost like, well done. You know, well done.
And, okay, here's another thing I have to bring up. Where is Captain Braxton in all of this?
Seriously.
That's
oh, my God.
Question.
Where is the time cop on this baby?
Char, I think you'll like this explanation. There's actually a novel that deals with that very question. It's called Watching the Clock. And it's where they realize that if it wasn't for Janeway, the Borg would have taken over the Federation. And so because like it was a crippling blow to the Borg, they're like, okay, well, it was for the greater good. It was for the benefit of Starfleet. Because I think that the Time Police or whatever, the Temporal Prime Directive Police, like the people who Braxton was with, and we got to remember that Braxton actually has psychosis and he was integrated into his other former self, so he's not actually with the cops anymore. But I think they said that the Borg were going to end up assimilating the galaxy by 2600 if Janeway didn't do this.
Wow.
So, okay. Again, people, this is just a novel. It's called Watching the Clock. This isn't canon. This isn't on screen. We can't really say like, oh, well, that justifies everything. But I mean, that's one way to think of it. Like, it was a crippling blow to the Borg, and so they're pretty much like, by any means necessary.
Okay.
Like, this is okay.
I'm gonna have to check this out. This sounds interesting. But
I think so too. Yeah.
It also kind of reiterates the point that Janeway should have not made a deal with the Borg in the first place. She should have let Species 8472 beat the crap out of them while they still could. Oh,
you're right.
Yeah.
If Scorpion never happened, then Endgame would never have to happen. And on top of that, if she just did the right thing in Caretaker, Scorpion would have happened, and then Endgame would have happened.
God. My brain hurts now.
And then we wouldn't have a show.
Exactly.
No.
Again.
Okay, well, I think that's a great place to end because now we love Janeway, and we know that she makes the decisions, and it's hard sitting into the chair, and hindsight is 20/20, and so I give her a lot of flack, and I know you guys too, but there's certain things that you just can't defend, and that's definitely like Admiral Janeway's actions.
That's definitely one of them.
Because
right?
it was definitely not for the crippling blow to the Borg. It was because I miss my boyfriend, Chakotay.
Yeah. And Seven.
And seven.
Yeah. Yes. And we just scratched the surface of this topic, guys. There are so many more instances we could go into and nitpick all the finer details of the things that she has done. This is by no means comprehensive in half an hour, obviously.
No. Right.
So I'm sure we're going to be revisiting this topic in future episodes, either talking about specific incidences or maybe down the line doing another Prime Directive episode where we pick out more of the things that happen in the 7-year journey home and discuss them.
Also, if you guys feel like we missed some really important ones, please go to trek.fm/forums and comment there. Get a conversation going where we talk about when she broke it or when she didn't. And also, while you're at it, go to iTunes and leave us a review. Give us a rating. If you give us a 5-star rating, let us know, and we'll mention you on the podcast. Next week, we're going to be getting back to our roots, and that's with a character analysis. And some of you have been waiting the entire time we've been doing the show for this character analysis. And that is for the cat suit lady herself, 7 of 9, of Tertiary Adjunct Unimatrix 01.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Neelix.
No, I wish we were doing him next, but no, we're talking about Seven, and I think this is going to be a lush conversation and with many differing opinions. Before we go, we need to tell you about our new sponsor, trekfan.org. Everybody needs to go to this website. This is a very interesting website. It's part mystery, part puzzle, and once you crack this code, you will only want more and more. And I'm not going to say anything more than that, because seeing is believing, and this is incredibly interesting. So
it is. Go there and figure it out, and once you do, then you get into the real meat and bones of what this project is actually about.
So I am your co-host, Tristan Rendell. You can find me at The Insane Robin on Twitter.
And you can find me at Oh The Profanity.
And you can find me at Loria68.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to tune in next week, and this has been To The Journey!
To the Journey!